If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Greener is fried rice, I could cook an egg on you. Late night game time, coffee on the stove. Your sweet ice cream, but you could use a flake or two. Blue bubble gum, twist it any time. I don't want you to get lost. I don't want you to go broke. I want you.
If you're hearing Harry Styles on the morning show, it can only mean one thing. It's time to talk Royals baseball with Annie Rogers. Good morning, Annie. How are you?
Good morning. And I love the connection between Harry Styles and the Royals. We need more of that in the world.
It's something to make people smile, at least,
anything,
right?
Anything to put a smile on our face right now with the Kansas City Royals. And you had a beautiful day of weather yesterday, but then Alec Lewis decided to spill coffee all over you. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. It was really quite a disaster in the press box yesterday, but we persevered through it. It ended up being okay.
So the Royals lose a series to the Oakland A's, and obviously that's not great because the Oakland A's are not good. It's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of what happened yesterday. I guess we should start there because Brady Singer got into the ninth inning of a game. And one of the things that we've been talking about with the young pitching staff this year is that it's just so rare to see Royals starting pitchers get even through six innings, let alone into the ninth inning of a game. But if you look at the stat line, he gave up five runs. He takes the loss. His ERA is 4.5. I felt like he was pretty unlucky yesterday, actually, to give up five runs. What do we take away from his performance in yesterday's game?
You know, it was a really weird one. You're right. Just the line didn't really show how well he pitched. You know, five runs is five runs. I totally understand that. But when you're the Royals right now, you're going to look at any positives that you can take from this season. And I think Singer working through some adversity, getting into the ninth inning, that's a huge positive for him, especially just what he's shown last year and the early part of this year is when he does face, you know, a lot of situations on base, he's not able to pitch out of those jams. I think we talked about this last week when he was able to get, you know, through the sixth inning last week against the A's. They, you know, pitching out of some of those on-base jams, that's a big deal for him. And to be able to get into the ninth inning is huge. I think it says more about where the bullpen is right now than really anything else. I think if the Royals had had fresh arms, fresh high-leverage arms in the bullpen, yesterday, we wouldn't really be talking about this. I don't imagine Singer getting out of the seventh inning without, you know, help from the bullpen. But this is where the Royals are right now with some of those arms down there. Josh Stallman is on the IL, and Dylan Coleman had pitched back-to-back days. Taylor Clark was coming off an inning in the third on Saturday. So there were a few guys that were down, and there are a few guys that really I think the Royals trust in those really high-leverage spots to help them win games. So that's going to be a storyline to watch over the next few weeks as Stallman recovers from the neck strain is who steps up in his place because Barlow can't pitch, you know, three innings of high leverage, even though he'll surely try because his arm apparently can go through everything.
Okay, yeah, so Josh Stallman, let's talk about him for a second, as you mentioned, going on the aisle with this neck strain. I don't know how many times I remember a pitcher dealing with a neck issue that ended up causing him to lose so much velocity on his fastball the way that usually you see a guy lose his velocity, your first thought is, oh no, he's got a shoulder issue, he's got some sort of arm issue, a neck issue. How did this develop, and how serious do we think this is going to be?
Yeah, I think the Royals are still trying to answer those questions. They're going to go through tests with Stallman today and the remainder of this week. and kind of see what they can find, what solutions they can find. But the neck strain wasn't, it was lingering over the past several days, and it wasn't allowing him to finish through his delivery. Just kind of running throughout his whole arm. You're right, when you see the velocity, you think elbow or shoulder, but I think this in effect did have something to do with those things, just because the neck wasn't allowing him to get fully loose. It wasn't allowing him to finish through his full delivery and finish off his pitches. That's where you saw the velocity drop. That's where you saw the lack of command. Excuse me. And the Royals were giving him days off in between outings, which they typically do, because, you know, he's struggled with back-to-back days, but that wasn't fixing the issue, so this was the right time to give him an extended rest period and kind of find some answers through tests and imaging and whatnot to see if they can fix the issue and have him come back relatively soon.
We're talking to Annie Rogers. She covers the Royals for MLB. They lost 2 of 3, as we mentioned. Today, they welcome the Rangers to town. Chris Bubich is on the hill for the Royals. He's 1-4. He's, you know, I look back, and we're going to talk about Jackson Coar in a minute. And, you know, the early game when they lost 17-3 to Cleveland, Bubich started, couldn't get out of the first inning. Coar was in relief, gave up a whole bunch of runs. It's his only appearance. Brady Singer came in, pitched sparingly after that. And they've all had different paths, right? Singer went down. Bubich has been down. Coar down, now back. And Singer looks like he's got things right. Bubich, kind of still a mixed bag right now. Looks like he's got things going the right direction. What do you expect out of him, not only tonight, but for the rest of the year? Are you guys seeing enough stuff out of him to think that he's maybe figured enough stuff out at the major league level? Or is he still not enough to depend on consistency out of him?
I think you hit on the right word there with consistency. That's the biggest key for him, because you have starts like last week in Anaheim where he puts together his best start of the season. Really good stuff. You know, he flashes plus stuff, you know, at times, but it's all about consistency throughout the outing, inning to inning, and then also throughout start to start. If he can put together a good start this tonight against the Rangers, and he has a pretty good opponent in Martin Perez as well over there, that's going to start to change how we view him and where we view him for the future. You know, he had a run of really consistent starts last year to end the season, and I think that's why he earned a spot in the rotation out of spring training, is because he did show the consistency and he brought it over into spring training. And then it kind of fell apart, and that's why you saw him get sent down. I'm really interested to see what the Royals do when Daniel Lynch comes back from the injured list, which I don't think it will be too long. He's just letting a left index finger blister cool down. But how they see the rotation, what they do there, is going to be really interesting. I think everybody is pretty much pitching for their spot every time they go out there. You mentioned Singer kind of settling down. I think he has a spot secured, so you would think that, you know, Bubich is the one that really is auditioning for his spot every time he goes out there. And last week he earned it. We'll see what happens tonight, but I think the key for him is just consistency, because we've seen all of the ups and downs with him in his career.
And what is the plan with Coar back up here? You know, he had the devastating, his major league numbers have not been good, and it was one day this year and he got sent down. What are they seeing from him down there? Is he just going to be up here to kind of be long relief? I mean, he's not set to start this week, right?
Correct. Yeah, long relief. You know, as I mentioned, the bullpen is really short on some of those arms. So if they can, you know, kind of tag team Coar and Daniel Megden for those longer innings of relief, they'll do that. You know, honestly, I can also see him in one inning stints too. There's a fine balance there, because if you burn him from one inning one day, you're probably not going to have him the next for longer relief if you do need that. So that'll kind of depend on, you know, Mendon's rest and where he's at and his availability. But Coar has the stuff to be a late inning guy. He's got the high octane arm. He's got the weapons. It's just a matter of command. You know, he has not seen that translate over to the major league level. He's the first to admit that. You know, we can all see it through the numbers and what we're watching on the field. So it's I'm really interested to see the changes that he made with his fastball and with his delivery in AAA. Are they going to translate over to the major leagues this time around? Is he going to get the availability to pitch, consistently? We'll see that too. I'm not sure. When these starters go into the bullpen, you know, like Singer and Coward did to start the season, they didn't really get much opportunities to pitch out of there. So we'll kind of see how that all plays out. But, yeah, right now we see him in a long relief role for the Royals.
We're visiting with Annie Rogers, and Annie, also on the injury front. We got the Friday news dump about Salvador Perez, and I was looking through my Instagram over the weekend at some point, and I saw this picture of Salvi with his hand in a cast on a balcony somewhere overlooking the ocean. I think that it's kind of like a microcosm in some ways of just how the season feels like it's going, that we all knew, I think, that they needed to put Salvi on the shelf for a while, but it turns out surgery on the UCL in his thumb. I thought the UCLA was in your elbow. I don't know what
You're no doctor.
I don't know what any of these things are. He's going to be out for a while, right? Like a couple months, easy. And I'm curious. They shut him down for a while with the thumb sprain. He tried to come back. I didn't think he ever looked like he was right when he came back. Do they feel like they rushed him back? Or that they mismanaged it in any way? Or is it just like, hey, look, we gave it a shot, and I don't know. What are their thoughts on where they're at right now with the way things played out with Salvi and his thumb?
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, when he came back, it didn't look right, but he worked through it, and it looked like it was getting better. I mean, he put together a really hot stretch at the plate, was catching quite a bit. You can always, look back at these things and say, we should have done this, we should have done that. Hindsight's 20/20. For 2 weeks or so, he was looking like everything was healed. And then, one swing kind of tweaked it again and sent him down this path. When you're dealing with things like this, too, and you're a veteran leader, the player is always part of the conversation with every single team, no matter what club you're talking about, what injury you're talking about. Things like this, when players think they can play through it and, you get the okay from the medical staff, the player has a say. And obviously Salvi wants to play every time. I think he would play right now in a cast, to be quite honest with you. That's how much he wants to play. Obviously he listens to the medical staff, but that's part of the conversation I think people don't really understand or think about. They always are quick to blame, the mismanagement by the team, but So I urge people to think about that for a little bit, but I do think that he was getting better, and then one swing kind of tweaked it and sent him down this path. And you can always look back and say, "Gosh, should we have shut him down?" But you don't when the medical team okays it, and you don't want to shut down. Excuse me, your veteran catcher. You're always going to err on the side of letting him decide if he's ready to go and ready to play, and he was. But yeah, a really unfortunate scene of events, the way that it all played out, and we'll see if he can make it back. Right now, they're targeting early September for him. See if he can make it back for the end of the season. I have no doubt he will, because he is one of the more relentless players that we've ever seen.
So, is the thought that this surgical repair, then there will be no issues? I mean, listen, I know you can get hurt, right? We saw Bryce Harper get hurt the other day, the thumb, something like that. But this is a fix, and then this won't be a lingering thing. That's the idea of the surgery?
Yeah, that's the idea. You never know how it's going to recover or how it's going to work out. Like you said, anybody can get hurt at any time, but that would be the idea. He's going to have to rehab it. He's probably going to have to wear something on it when he swings, when he gets back to that point. But right now he's shut down and letting it heal. But yeah, that's the idea, that it'll be fixed, and it wasn't recovering on its own. So surgery is the best option.
We're visiting with Annie Rogers. Hey, Annie, one of the positives though over the weekend was the return of Zach Greinke. Six innings, four strikeouts, he gives up a run. All good with Zach now that he's back?
Yeah, absolutely. He looked exactly like what we saw the beginning of the season. You could tell, too, then, like, when he was struggling right before he went on the injured list, that was because he was hurt. He was not able to finish his pitches off, and he didn't have any crispness on them. And once he was able to kind of shut it down for a little bit, work his way back to a couple rehab starts, get back to the mound in Kansas City, you know, he looked exactly like what the Royals wanted him to be. So really good to see him back and kind of anchoring that rotation again. You forget how young the rotation is without, you know, his age in there. So he's back and really better than ever.
Annie, you know, I'm not out there all the time. You're out there all the time. You're around this team a lot more. Do you get the feeling that this whole, you know, season not going very well has worn on these guys? I mean, it's hard to kind of gauge how into it they all are. I know it's a weird game because it's an individual sport. You have to take care of yourself, but it's a team thing as well. What's the overall kind of feel you get when you're around the guys in the clubhouse and watching these games? Baseball is so long to get through a year. Is this you see any light at the end of the tunnel for them, or are they just kind of like, oh my God, another day, and now you lose two to the A's and all that? I mean, does it look like it's piling up on them?
Yeah, I think it would wear on anybody, right? Losing is not great. It's not fun. You have to really battle mentally to show up the next day. I do see it wearing on them, especially in May when it was pretty negative around the team. But I think these last couple weeks they've been playing a lot better. Yes, they lost two A's this weekend, and that's not what you want to see. It's not ideal at all, especially with how bad the A's are. But there were positives to take away from it, and I know that's not what fans want to hear, but that's where this team is at right now. Is, you know, take what you can from these games and use that to build on for the next game. You know, they're not where they want to be in the standings or in record, but what they can do is control what kind of things they take from each game into the next. And so that's where I see them right now. The vibes are a lot better these last few weeks in that clubhouse, just because they are playing a little better. They're starting to take that turn. So we'll see if that continues. It's crazy that it's already the end of June, but it's only the end of June, right? Like,
right.
We still have a long way to go. We've played, you know, 72 games, but we still have quite a few games to go. And I think that's kind of where they're at mentally, is take what you can from each positive and build on that, hopefully for the future.
Annie, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, guys. See you later.
All right, that is Annie Rogers covering the Kansas City Royals, and of course, they are back at it tonight at Kauffman Stadium against the Texas Rangers. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm excited to talk to our next guest because it's really been cool to watch his career just take off, you know, from starting to work. I don't know, how long has he been at Westwood? We'll ask. I want to ask him about all this stuff.
You know, Kevin Kugler used to just be one of these sports talk radio hacks running around talking about Nebraska football. Now he's on all the big events.
I remember talking to Howard Dinerov, the guy at Westwood One, about play-by-play and all that stuff, and he was just like, this Kevin Kugler, you got to keep an eye on him. He's going places. That was years ago, and he keeps going places, and he was on the call of the College World Series here recently. Kevin, man, how are you? What's going on?
I'm doing great. That's a very nice build up. I appreciate it. Good to be on with you guys.
Dude, Todd and I were just talking. What you're like to me, the royalty of play by play in this town in Kansas City is Kevin Harlan. Like he's the gold standard. He's everywhere. He's doing NFLs on TV. He's doing NFL on the radio. He's on the NBA. He's doing college basketball stuff whenever it's big time. And
how many jobs do you have now is the question.
Kevin. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at here.
All right, let's see. I do the NFL on Fox. Mm-hmm. That's my fall job. I do college basketball for Big Ten Network and for Fox. I do NFL football and college basketball for Westwood One and college baseball, obviously, for Westwood One. And I'm it's basically three people, three groups, Fox and Big Ten Network and Westwood One that employ me. So,
but now you don't have anything to do for a while. This is your downtime?
I've got a couple of major league games, baseball games in July.
Okay.
But this is now my downtime. Yeah, I mean, we're talking two games in July, and then I do Texans preseason, so I've got a couple of games in August because they took the third preseason game and gave it to Amazon Prime, which I know will delight Al Michaels to be doing San Francisco Houston third week of the preseason.
The check's going to clear for him.
I think he'll be satisfied with that.
Yeah.
This is by design the calm time. You know, you do, 55 basketball games before the tournament. You do a bunch of football games, and there's got to be a downtime, and that's this.
Well, the good news for you is you don't have to work tonight because Ole Miss swept this College World Series. I went up there. I'd never been, and I went up there this weekend, and I really—
I'm just glad you survived your hotel.
My hotel was fine. It was fine. Thank you for the recommendation.
Good.
It wasn't the greatest hotel, but all we had to do was sleep. My wife we walked in, the lady had all kinds of tattoos on her face checking us in, but this is the world today. It's okay. It's fine. We were not far from down there. We'll talk about that off the air. But Omaha was so awesome. And you got to tell me this since I haven't been there. Has there ever been a group of fans invade this place like Ole Miss did? Or has this happened every year with someone?
We've been spoiled the last 2 years. Mississippi State fans really did a pretty good job last year of coming in. I think this year was a little more. Here's what I can compare this to, and you guys will get this. This was very similar to when Nebraska made the College World Series. Mm-hmm. That's what I liken this to from a crowd standpoint and a one-sided crowd standpoint. You know, you were there. The Oklahoma fans were there, but they were overwhelmed. We estimated 80-20 at least Ole Miss fans to Oklahoma fans. And that was, that's what it was like when Nebraska was in the College World Series back in the early 2000s. It was 90-10. Nebraska fans, and the place felt like a Memorial Stadium light when Nebraska was in its heyday.
There's always a few just locals who are there. There's plenty of like youth baseball teams in Omaha. So when Nebraska was there, they were all Nebraska fans. So you got all of it that way. But yeah, it was amazing. And Ole Miss, they hadn't won anything as national championships and all that. So I get why they were all there, but they loved it. I mean, when we were driving up yesterday, or Sunday, Saturday, what is today, Monday? Saturday we're driving up, yep. I think I counted 35 Mississippi license plates just from Kansas City, starting at like 11:30 until our drive was over at like 2-something up there. And I told my wife, I said, this is going to be wild. And I thought, well, I really was rooting for them to make it after Oklahoma made it instead of Arkansas, because I thought there would have been a ton of Arkansas fans just because it's closer. But Mississippi fans didn't care how far the drive was. They were just
720
there.
Miles. They drove from Oxford. I know of people. My old co-host, Michael Sevier, when I did talk shows for 1,000 years, he had friends come up from Oxford. He dropped them off at the stadium yesterday. They had driven all night. They literally got off their couch on Saturday and said, we're going. That's it. We're going.
Got to be there.
We're going. And they weren't alone in that. That was it was the biggest game in the history of that athletic department, because they had never won any kind of championship. Now, if they win something in football, obviously that will trump this. But as of right now, over 100 years of athletics achievement, this was the number one thing that's ever happened to Ole Miss. So they wanted to be there for it.
And it's the SEC, which just means more. We hear that all the time, too.
It actually does, I think.
And no, I mean, it's... Well, we could go. I mean, yes, it does, and part of it's because that's what they got. You know, like what you're not. There's no professional sports teams in Mississippi or Alabama on a major league level.
Right.
You know, I mean, the college sports in the South is the thing, and you know and they're good at baseball in the South right now. And I'm curious what you think, Kevin, is in terms of Omaha as a site. Do the people from the SEC like coming up there? You think they're going to try to steal it away from you at some point in Omaha? Because they seem to own the whole competition anymore.
I think Omaha has become so synonymous with this event that I don't know that they could steal it away. And I don't know that they want to. I think this is such a special thing to be able to come to Omaha, get treated like big leaguers for a week and a half, and have – all of your fans there. I mean, Ole Miss fans proved they'll make it up there. LSU fans still come every year, whether their team's in it or not. It's just sort of a rite of passage now in the world of college baseball. I think it would be very hard to take it away. And look, they're not going to take it away for another decade and a half because it's a long-term contract that's going to be here through 2035.
Yeah, I saw the deal that's, you know, it was a 25-year deal they signed back in like 08, and it's over till 35. I was talking to my wife about this. I said, the Royals want to build a downtown stadium. I said, in 2036, they said 100% try to steal this because it's just so cool. All the fans.
How about that, Kevin? Todd has you on the show, and then he wants to steal the event from Omaha.
I want to steal it is what I want.
I never worry about that when it's major league teams talking because there is no scenario that you're going to be able to convince the Kansas City Royals
to take a four-game road trip.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
A four-city road trip in late June. Good luck with that.
Well, I think it's actually...
It's not going to be a major league town that's going to get this away if somebody gets it away.
I think actually it's against the CBA now. I don't think they can have four-city trips. The Royals were basically out of town this whole time. They had a three-city West Coast road trip, but it takes four cities to play this thing. And I think it's actually against the CBA to get it done. But what a great event. And the downtown
Omaha
perfect
town for it. Omaha,
has been,
yeah.
What that new arena and the stadium have done for the city, I mean, you live there. How incredible has it been with all the growth down there with the restaurants and the apartments and the hotels and all that?
It's fantastic. This event has always been the crown jewel of the Omaha sporting scene. Omaha likes to consider themselves more of a big event town because there's, you know, the Storm Chasers here, obviously the AAA affiliate of the Royals, but there's not an identity outside of that. You know, Lincoln has the Huskers. Creighton basketball is here, and Creighton basketball has obviously been terrific, but that's a fan base that has grown, but it is still limited when compared to a state school like the University of Nebraska and football. So what's the draw? Well, the draw is big events. They host the swim trials here almost all the time, it mm-hmm. seems like, and the College World Series, which is the crown jewel and always has been since I was a kid. That's been the defining sporting event of the Omaha sports landscape. And now the new stadium, it's firmly entrenched. Everybody knows it. Everybody understands it. They've got their own tradition. It's different than it was at Rosenblatt, but different doesn't mean bad. It's just different. And it's a beautiful ballpark. You have plenty of room. People can walk the concourse, which is a thing that people like to do. And you know, it's the same people. A lot of new fans coming this year with Ole Miss. It's just a great event. It's a week-long party. They compressed the schedule this year. I think that was a fantastic idea because the old schedule dictated by television was such that you may not have games on the second weekend, which was a huge mistake. You can't go dark on a weekend of the College World Series. This year, obviously, huge games on the weekend, great weather. I mean, you really couldn't have asked for much more.
Oh, just some more fundamental play out of the Sooners, but it's college
five
baseball,
wild
man.
Pitches is fine. I mean, what's five wild pitches in a championship series? I mean,
what's the problem? What's the problem with that? No problem at all. You know, your number one draft pick makes errors in the field and doesn't get a hit. Yeah, it's fine. It's all good.
Kevin, in addition to complaining about the wild pitches and pass balls, Todd and our meteorologist here in Kansas City is an Oklahoma guy too. He was griping about replay. what do you make of him, especially since You have a great perspective on this because you just listed off all of the different sports you cover at all these different levels, and they all implement replay in different ways, right? What do you make of the replay usage in college baseball and how it came into play in this series?
Well, I've got multiple issues with this. One is there are only certain things that are reviewable. I think if you're going to have replay, you review everything. I'm not saying balls and strikes. You don't go and challenge whether that's a ball or a strike. That's too nitpicky. But there are certain plays you can review and certain plays you can't. And at certain times in the game, I remove all of those restrictions. The second issue I have with replay across all sports is if you cannot come to a determination within 90 seconds, it is not indisputable. Thus, that should not be a situation that is available for review anymore. It's over. You go back to the ruling on the field. It's not indisputable video evidence. Third, the review that I know drew the ire of your meteorologist and my esteemed friend, Mr. Lebo, was obviously the interference play that took the first run off the board. The rule is applied correctly, in my opinion, in that scenario. I just don't like the rule, and I think that's a rule that needs to be revisited in the offseason. It's a bad rule. I think they applied it correctly, but I don't think that it should be in the rule book written the way it is, forcing the umpires to make that call. And review allows you to parse that out. You know, you didn't make that call when it happened, but then you look at it upon review and you can break it down and, oh, yes, he was inside the line. All of that, to me, strikes wrong, because I think the rule is wrong. So I didn't take issue with the use of replay in that situation. It was a great challenge by Mike Bianco, but I really have issue with the rule in the first place, and I really think that needs to be taken away.
Yeah, the baseball needs to say, listen, if the guy is already across the plate and they haven't even tried to get him out, the run should score. Call the guy out at first, but have the run count. But that's another thing entirely. I do think it's interesting that they can review in college baseball whether or not a guy moved in to try to get hit by a pitch. And I thought the way things were going for the Sooners yesterday, they were going to say the kid did lean into the ball because his leg moved a quarter of an inch. I'm glad they didn't, because that's too much, I think. But how do you get the intent on a player on whether or not he's trying to actually get hit by a baseball? You know, it is what it is. This was not as bad. There's a game I was watching earlier in the series where there was like a 4-minute review on something. I can't remember which game I was watching, but it was insane how long the review took. And I think you're right on the time limit. The pitch clock time limit, I like that. They make them get the ball and pitch it. Of course, they've already found a way out of that. Just step off and act like you're going to throw to first, and then you start the pitch clock over. I don't know. It's just like they're trying things. But here's what we know, Kevin. No matter what rule you have, people will try to skirt it. That's what human nature is, correct?
Yep, correct. No doubt about it. No matter how you write it, they'll try to find a loophole for it. We see it in politics. We see it in sports. We see it in life. Every single aspect. If there's a rule, you're going to find a way to try to get around that rule.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. So it's a great event. I'm not going to encourage that we steal this event, okay? But I would love us to steal this event.
He's brought it up three times today, Kevin.
It's 2036, man, or 2035. Yeah. I mean, that's just a snap of the fingers in our lives. It could be down here. We could get this thing done. What are your thoughts about what's been happening with broadcasters? You mentioned, you know, all the moving and shaking, right? Joe Buck is leaving Fox. Troy Aikman's leaving Fox. Al Michaels is going to Amazon. This is pretty wild. You know, you've got all these different jobs here. Does this mean you get to move up a rung on the Fox games? What's your Fox fall schedule going to be like for the NFL?
I say this 100% honestly, I have no idea. I have no idea if this impacts me, how this impacts me. I have not heard anything about my schedule. I know I'm working. I'm hopeful that I'm back with my partner, Mark Sanchez. That was what we had last year, and I very much enjoy Mark. So we'll find out as we get closer to the season. As of now, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm on a need-to-know basis. And as far as I need to know I'm working in the fall, and I'm looking forward to it. That's the only information I've gotten about all this. But it's been wild. I've never seen anything like it. None of us have ever seen anything like it. The big name shakeup all across the board in the world of pro football broadcasting, it's been crazy to see where everybody has landed in this situation. And once Tom Brady retires in however many years, we'll have another shakeup again on the analyst side, on the Fox side. So Whenever that is, that may be about the time you're stealing the College World Series from Omaha, the way Tom Brady's playing his career right now.
Right, right. And then he'll make almost as much money as Kevin Kugler doing games, I heard. You know, really close.
Well, I hope for his sake. I hope for his sake. I mean, you know, he's barely scraping by right now between he and Giselle's earning potential. So hopefully, maybe someday, they can get themselves on the right side of the ledger.
Yeah, the reports are he's going to make more money doing games than he has been playing games, which is incredible. But it is an interesting landscape, Kevin. Kevin, I'm going to ask for some on-air career advice from a guy because I do play-by-play in Major League Soccer, and the landscape is not only changing with where the commentators are going, the landscape in sports is changing in terms of where the games are airing or streaming, really is the more appropriate word, and that's happening in NFL now, right? These different streaming services are getting in the game, and Major League Soccer has gone and done this one-of-a-kind deal, and I think it's just first-of-a-kind, really, where Apple TV is going to have their entire league rights, and you pay one package, and you can get all the games, no blackouts, no restrictions across the world, and that means there's going to be commentary teams doing those games. I'm curious, because that, what you just painted, that's the life of a play-by-play guy, right? You unless you work for a team, which is what I've done for the last 8 years, and that might not exist anymore, you're kind of, where do I work next year? I don't know. I know I'm going to work. I think I'm going to work, but things, the rights are going to change. How do you keep track, especially with all the gigs you have, how do you keep track of it all? And how do you decide, okay, this is the best place for me to be now when it's all such a quickly shifting landscape?
Yeah, you have to be paying attention because you're right. And it's going to change even more rapidly, in my opinion, over the next several years because you now have the streaming entities that provide another bidder into all of these rights. And the one thing we have seen as television has shifted and viewing habits have shifted, the one thing that still draws people to television, it's not dramas, it's not reality shows. One thing that draws people to television is live sports. That's the one thing that gets people to say, I want to click that because they don't want to hear about it later. They want to be able to experience it live. It's not the same DVR or however you watch it now. You need to watch it live. And partly because if you're on social media, that's the community you're watching it with. That's your sports bar right now. All the dudes you follow on social media are tweeting about the game, and you need to be a part of that conversation so you watch the game too. It's the one thing that's going to drive people. And now that you have the streamers realizing that, and they say, well, we've got a lot of money. Why don't we go bid on MLS? Why don't we go bid on MLB? Apple TV's got a piece of that. The NFL will always have some games on free TV as long as free TV exists, which it will for, you know, the foreseeable future at least. But everybody else, I think is up in the air, including the colleges. I mean, we're waiting right now to see where the Big Ten rights go. Fox is going to get part of those back. That's been reported. But the other part of those Big Ten rights could go to anybody, including a streamer. So you're going to have, I mean, and that shakes up the college landscape because that would be the first college entity to go with any sort of a streaming package if they decide to do that. I don't know that they will, but if they decide to do that, well, that changes everything again in that landscape. So from a broadcaster standpoint, you're kind of at the mercy of the bidding wars. I mean, if you're with a network that gets them, great. But say, for example, you're somebody who's calling Big Ten games for ESPN right now, and ESPN doesn't get those rights back. Well, you're either going to a different league or you're trying to figure out how you can get over to the other place that now got those rights. So it's a little bit of a daunting situation as you try to navigate, all right, am I in the right spots for the things right. I do? Are they going to keep the rights to the things that I'm doing? And you kind of cross your fingers, and every time one of them that you work for signs a deal with somebody that keeps you going, you're like, okay, good. That's great. that's great news.
Yeah.
They got the – you know, Westwood One not too long ago re-upped with the NFL and the NCAA, and you kind of are like, okay, good. All right, that's great news. They're back in business, and so am I. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. It's and so much of it's out of your control. You know, you just have to kind of, I mean, you just, like you said, you keep your head on
a
swivel.
You guys keep all the jobs. You're stealing all the jobs. There's these kids out there, Kevin. They want jobs. You're taking the jobs.
Hey, man, that's why I'm not doing it on a national level like Kevin, but I mean, I'm doing MMA. I'm doing soccer. I'm doing talk radio. Hey, give me whatever gigs you got. I'll take whatever they got.
You you do whatever you can do to make it work. You know, like in the old movie Total Recall, to quote that Benny guy that was the instigator with Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, I got five kids to feed. I mean, I don't have five kids, but as far as anybody knows, I got five kids to feed. Let's go. I got to keep working.
What's the travel like coming in and out of Omaha? How hard is it for you to get to all these places?
It's really not that bad, mainly because, especially in the fall, I'm almost exclusively NFL cities now. So NFL cities are notoriously easy to get into as far as ease of travel in 2022, which is obviously not easy considering we see flights canceled every day. But the hub cities obviously have more options. So when you're going to Los Angeles, you're going to New York, you're going to, you know, Chicago, you're going to Houston, you're going to Dallas, there's a lot of options. Phoenix, I mean, there's all kinds of flights in and out of these airports, so that's a little easier. The college towns are tricky. I mean, I there are people who are in Omaha right now who are trying to get out of Omaha from the College World Series, and they're finding it difficult. I know for a fact that the Tuesday morning flight that a lot of people were on going west from here has already been canceled by United Airlines. So there's a scramble right now trying to figure out how to get out of Omaha. There were some NCAA folks whose flights were canceled coming here from Indianapolis. They rented a car and drove, so now they're driving back to Indianapolis because there weren't any options for them, and they all of a sudden had a car that they had to deal with. So the travel is always the thing that, you know, is a juggling act, and I've learned over the years that nobody cares about your issues with travel outside of the people you work for, and you never – I used to occasionally tweet about this, so I never mention a thing about airlines or travel anymore because it's always people like, you got no problem, shut up. So I don't ever do it anymore. It's like, you don't care how I get there. Just as long as I get there and do the game, nothing else matters.
Exactly right. Well, it was fun to be up there in Omaha. I would love to go back again sometime, even if the Sooners aren't there. Probably better if your team's not there. Just go enjoy the
game. Yeah, I think you can just enjoy it. I think you can just enjoy the baseball. And, you know, you came out of a good year because it's the first year, I think, ever that we didn't have a weather delay of any kind.
Oh, it was beautiful
all
week, yeah.
Weather. So next year, if you come, you just come in an arc because it's going to just pour rain for days and days and days. Bring a pair of animals to put on the boat because it's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, enjoy this brief downtime before it all ramps up for you in August with the preseason Texans games and all that. We'll be listening to you right here on Sports Radio 810. Keep up the great work, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Kevin.
That's Kevin Kugler and Fox. Westwood One.
Big Ten Network.
Big Ten Network. You see him all over the place. He's got all the gigs. Yeah. He's got them all, and he's doing a great job. He's one of the best play-by-play guys in the country.
See him in an airport near you anytime.
You might see him in an airport near you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm really excited. We have a special guest in studio who's making a bit of a career change herself. And we're going to talk about all that with her next on Sports Radio 810 WHB.